Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello, and oh my goodness. This holiday season has been a unique one, but we are going to be entering into the world of the mind. My guest, Mary Phelan, is in England, a short distance, if you will, outside of London, and we're going to be talking about dreams. Now, dreams have had a very powerful impact on my life, and as it turns out, Mary has decided to share her experience about dreams because it embarked her upon a journey that has, well, it has created a phenomenal experience from her. Mary Phelan, I want to welcome you to the program.
Thank you. Thank everybody for listening.
Mary, you were born in Dublin. And you've lived in Germany, and now you are in the area near England, near London, excuse me. You have written quite a bit. You are a woman that has an inquiring mind. When you were sharing with me your story about how the inquiries into dreaming, the values of dreaming, the interpretation of dreams, all of this evolved for you because you had a very personal experience. Would you share that with my audience?
Yes, certainly. Exactly 10 years ago, I was in recovery from a couple of life events. I had been quite ill. I'd had to have a major operation, and it coincided with the demise of a career I had in book editing. And luckily, the illness turned out to be not serious at all. But I still needed a period of recovery. I believe that when you become physically ill, your mind also suffers a little, and I needed to take time out to recuperate before moving forward. But I realized that I needed to move forward in a different direction, and except I was unsure of what to do. And now, I had always been fascinated by the subject of dreams. As a child, I actually remember reading a book about it. But again, like life seems to take over everything. You go to school, you've got to get your exams, you've got to find a job, you've got to socialize with people. And my interest in dreams got buried under all of that. But on this particular day, I was wandering around the shops, and I'm always drawn to bookstores. I absolutely love books. And I was drawn towards the self-help area of the shop, and my eyes rested upon the spines of books with titles like The Meaning of Your Dreams, Hope Through Dreaming, and eventually I spotted The Dream Whisperer by a writer called Davina McHale, and I bought that and a dream dictionary, and I read the books, and they were very interesting, and certain parts of the books seemed to certain elements of the book seemed to address the extraordinary dreams I had been having throughout my recovery. And, of course, initially I put it all down to drugs I had been taking. And, you know, because I was living a slightly different type of life, so you would naturally expect to be having different dreams. But I found the books interesting, but I was dissatisfied. The writers, although very good, they didn't tell me everything I wanted to know, and I wanted to find out what my particular dreams meant to me. So I started keeping my dream diary, which I describe in detail in my own book. And what I discovered astounded me. I had always absorbed that so-called received wisdom that we're all dreaming about everything all the time. So it's not surprising if we have a dream that seems to coincide with a world event or whatever. But I discovered that I was not dreaming the same things all the time. And not only was the symbolism that appeared in my dreams quite varied, but different feelings accompanied the various dreams. And I discovered that some dreams are just for fun. You know, they're a bit like the equivalent of maybe a cartoon on television. And some dreams were a bit scarier. But again, I discovered that I believe that the dreams were not necessarily a dream disorder, a sleep disorder, but it was just something somewhere was trying to tell me to pay greater attention to something. And other dreams were accompanied by very strong feelings. And I would awaken from these particular dreams with the with a sense of urgency, a feeling that I absolutely had to do something. That if you have an, it's like if something gives you an intense emotion, maybe something that somebody has told you or you've seen on television or read in a book, that you feel obliged to act on it. Well, to me, dreams were no different. After all, what is a dream? But it's a sort of a map of your own mind, a map of your own psyche. And the information that your subconscious is sending you is important, is at least as important than anything you read about somebody else. And the dream I quote most often is my dream about copywriting. I had long wanted to be a professional writer, and I had a few articles published on the subject of architecture because my BA degree is in art history, but I was unable to push it any further. So I had this dream that I was in, I actually walked into some kind of agency, and I spoke to this young man who was seated at a desk. And I looked at him and said, I absolutely must have a career as a copywriter. And I awoke from that dream with a feeling of absolute, utter certainty. And I began to trawl the internet. And within a few months, I was working for no fewer than 3 separate agencies writing online copy. For various firms and about various topics. And I realized that if just one dream could do this for me, well, surely it was possible to use dream power to move my life forward in various different ways. And essentially, that's what I've been doing ever since. Within a few years of beginning copywriting, I was doing a master's degree in English literature. And since then, I have been working as a tutor of English language and literature. And it's one reason I've also write more widely on literature, particularly Gothic literature, and it's also the reason why I consolidated the free material I've got into the book about dreams.
Dreaming has been a very strong influence in my life. When I received your book and was going through the material, I thought there are and have been a number of different publications throughout the years that I've come across, and one of them was titled Dreams Your Magic Mirror. And this was with Edgar Cayce. And Edgar Cayce here in the United States was called, you know, the dreaming prophet, the sleeping prophet. And this is a man that would go into an altered state, and it was phenomenal what came through him. And he didn't have the education, etc., but he was used as a vehicle to give information, to assist and help people have better lives, understand what was going on in their lives, etc. History is filled with the stories of different people who have gone through various dream experiences. There are scientists, there are writers like yourself, there are people in all kinds of industries that can relate and have related, because it has been printed, how the dream had a deep effect on them. And everybody does dream. And I think of my husband, there was the image of the tiger that for him always, whenever he had a vivid dream of a tiger, it showed something major in his life was happening. So the tiger for him was a very, very strong symbol. And I think many people that are listening to this may say, yes, for me, it is a white lobster or something else. We can go on the internet and there's all kinds of interpretations for symbols that it can occur in dreams. You have the Native American interpretations. And depending on a person's cultural background, those may or may not fit. And I agree with you. When it comes to the dream books, it's important to realize that as an individual, the job really is going to be up to us to do the interpretation. And we will know if it has valid, or maybe it's just a dream that's just fluff stuff and it's not even going to stay with us. But there are those particular aspects that can transform our lives. And I have experienced that just like you, personally. And this is something that when we pay attention to it, it makes a great deal of difference. Now, in your book, you have put together segments in your book that deal with, you know, the archetypes of dreams, meditative experiences. But I wanted to touch on the fairy tale, because so many writers, and you being one yourself, have experienced. I know I have. I had it happen just recently where I had to get up and write down what I was experiencing in the dreams because they were stories. I was getting stories, complete stories. And this is something, it can be very irritating when it happens to you more than once during the night. You go, oh, please, couldn't you have done this in a better way? But the truth is, when we're sleeping, that makes a difference because we are allowing the downloads, I like to call them. What is one of your most profound downloads that you have had relative to dreaming that has inspired you with your writing?
First of all, the dream that I most often refer to is a dream I had that I was sitting in a desert and the sun was, I couldn't tell if it was rising or setting, but I was just sitting there, and I could actually feel the heat. I don't know whether it was meant to. I don't know whether it was coming off the sand or coming from the actual sun, but I knew that I was waiting for someone. And again, one of the problems with dreams, a dream that gives you such intense feeling that you often remember details that may not actually have been there. And I am convinced that I was sitting in the shadow of a pyramid and a palm tree, because that's what we associate with deserts. And nothing actually happened, but I had this intense feeling of waiting. So when I woke up with the same feeling of waiting, I thought, wow, that was fantastic. So immediately I sprung into action and I wrote down all the motifs I remembered and the feelings associated with it. And I realized that I had an idea for a short story, and I wrote a story about somebody sitting in a desert waiting for someone to arrive, someone that was going to come along and change their whole life. And following that incident, I started seeing my dreams not necessarily as events surrounding me, but I started getting ideas for short stories and indeed longer works of fiction. And as the months progressed, I soon realized that I had a whole collection of ideas that could be turned into, that could be act as a sort of a springboard for various works of fiction. And eventually I had a collection which I call my 13 stories. And once I had them written, I thought, that's it, it's over now. But the ideas have continued to come, and I now have material for another collection of stories. And I'm just about to, the actual collecting of dreams gave me the idea for a novel, and I'm actually in the process of finishing a novel at the moment based on the subject of dream analysis. And I realized that through dreams that I've opened up a whole new world, a world of fiction writing. More profoundly, I've learned so many important things about me that I urge anybody who, I urge everybody to begin dream collection. But at absolute worst, you will end up with a collection of books that are fascinating to read, but are also find it great fun to write. But basically, the whole message of my book is that dreaming, listening to your dreams, can help you to find yourself. It's essentially a feedback system. You look in the mirror and you see all kinds of, when I look in a mirror, I see so many imperfections that I immediately run away again. But you see things that are out of place, things that can be improved, things that can be changed. But essentially, you question everything you do. You look at your own motives. You look at your own. You look at the motives of other people, because there's so much propaganda in this world. There's so much. There's so many fables out there and so many untruths that listening to your dreams is one way of sifting, other people's fantasy from your reality. Like, you know, when you're a child and people tell you, oh, if you read crusts, your hair will curl. Well, my hair should be standing on end right now, only it isn't. It's straight as anything. But essentially, for me, dreaming has brought me in touch with my most creative self. And I urge everyone to give it a go at least. And as I said, if at worst you'll end up with a collection of books that are very entertaining to read. I sometimes do that. I just go through my dream diaries and just read them. Just look over the scary dreams, the funny dreams, the more profound dreams. But I've never forgotten that dream of the person in the desert waiting for someone, and how it acts as a sort of a launch pad for writing different types of fiction.
I appreciated also some comments you've made, and I have heard this from other people as well. There is this aspect of creativity, daydreaming, and so many people feel that it's a waste of time. But when you think of earlier generations, instead of keeping ourselves so busy, where either it's television or something else that is taking our time, we're on the computer, we're on the internet, we are doing social media, there's all of this activity. One of the best gifts anybody can give themselves is to absolutely be quiet, to turn off all the electronic gadgets. The world is not going to stop spinning. And to just enter into the opportunity of being quiet and actually getting rest. There are so many individuals that are so stressed, especially with what is going on right now. I mean, with the COVID situation and people being in lockdown, and they're just so very, very anxious. Well, having the downtime can really serve you and serve you well. And this is something that you bring out. And daydreaming is a very useful tool. It actually can induce sometimes what is called lucid dreaming. But daydreaming allows us to explore different aspects of ourselves. And you talk about how when you were younger, daydreaming was considered a waste of time. It's not. There's often a lot that's going on when a child, especially, and even an adult, it doesn't make any difference, your age, but when you allow that, and kids may say, oh, I'm bored. Say, fine, you're bored. Figure out something to do. And they might just sit and lay on the ground or look up at a tree, and they are in another world, if you will. But that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. And sleep is so important. This is something that I know members of my family have shared stories about, how, gee whiz, they didn't need much sleep at all, and they went through this, that, or the other. I have seen the effects on these family members when they're sleep deprived. I know what happens with me. So this is something that has been documented. Sleep deprivation is not a good thing. And you really do have to have a break. And you cover this in your book as well.
Yes, absolutely. I believe that dreaming, both waking and sleeping, it's like taking a mental vacation. It's like, you know, we talk about getting away from it all, and we tend to mean, oh, you know, getting away from work or getting away from the everyday routine. But your mind is like, your mind is working all the time, and you absolutely got to get your mind away from that day-to-day routine, you know, the getting up in the morning, the dashing through breakfast, the dashing for the, well, in London, we tend to go for the bus and the train rather than drive everywhere. But your mind, I believe, is the most important possession you own. And you need to exercise it, certainly, but you also need to take it away to a place that no one else can touch. And I believe that dreaming is the effect of doing this. Okay, you fall asleep, but your mind has to go through a process. It's a bit like you're playing music. You touch the piano keys or the strings of the violin, and it's not so much the touching that's important, but it's the beautiful or otherwise music that comes out at the end. I believe that only when your mind is rested can you become acquainted with the wider universe of knowledge. Just recently, well, ever since finishing the book, in fact, I've been researching a phenomenon called the Akashic Sphere. And basically, the Akashic Sphere is a repository of consciousness, of wider consciousness. It's a collective memory of everything that's known to man. It's even a repository of things we don't know, the past, the present, the future of everything in the universe. It's an embodiment of all that there ever has been or ever will be. And I believe that psychic experiences spring from the ability to connect with this sphere. We refer to it colloquially as the sixth sense. And I believe that everybody can, to a greater or lesser extent, develop this sense. But in order to do so, we have to take our minds away from the ordinary and the everyday. And dreaming is one of the mechanisms by which we can do this. And I believe that this is the next level for mankind to develop the mind at least as much as, and probably more. I believe it's more important to develop your mind than your actual body. You know, you open a magazine and you see advertisements for all kinds of wonderful stuff that's supposed to make you more muscular and more beautiful and make your hair go stronger. But I never understand why people can't see that taking care of your mind is just as important as taking care of your body. And I believe that even a simple thing like daydreaming is one way to refresh your mind, whether you're at work or at leisure. And then when you resume work, you feel refreshed and replenished, and you may even win a creative idea or two by just letting your mind wander. And I can't understand why so few people recognize that, why daydreaming is looked upon with almost as if it's a major offense. So that's why I stress the importance of daydreaming in my text.
You also say in your book to, and I'll quote you directly, don't cast your pearls before swine. In other words, in this section of the book, you're saying be discerning about who you share your dreams with. You don't want people to mock you or tell you that you're stupid. And I know many years ago when the dreams I was having spurred me to start asking questions, it eventually led me to the woman who became my mentor. When these events happen, then you realize there's more going on than what you could possibly have imagined. And it opens up a world for a person that I think can be very, very insightful. And dreams, symbols change in the dreams. There's different activities. Some of them are nonsensical. But it is up to the individual to really discern what is real, what isn't, and how it can be used as a tool to, just as with you, empower one to make choices, to do things, to be a part of life, not separate from it, but to be a part of it. And I think that that is extraordinarily important. Now, you do have a website that people can go to. It's hubpages.com, and then there's a /, then there's the @ Mary Phelan, and your last name, Mary, is spelled Phelan. So that is hubpages.com/ the symbol @ Mary Phelan, Phelan. I really think that your book brings out a different perspective regarding dreams. I think your suggestions are very good. Of course, you've got a section in here on archetypes. You list a number of people in the dream glossary section of your book that were profoundly influenced by dreams and experiences that they had, which I always think is a fascinating thing to go through. I want to thank you very much, Mary, for being with me, and I wish you the very best in the upcoming new year of 2021. And I just think that you have started a different aspect of your career. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It has been my pleasure having Mary Phelan as a guest on my show. Check out her book, Dreams, Exploring Uncharted Depths of Consciousness. Donna Sebo here. We are going to be taking just a little bit of a mini break. We are going to be back, and we will not be able to open up the phone line, but I want you to know that we've got other good things to share with you. So stay with us. We will be back in just a bit. This is Donna Sebo. If you or someone you know is an author and would like to be interviewed on The Donna Sebo Show or Warriors for Peace, please send a copy of the publication along with contact information, phone number, email, and website to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. That's The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for review. Thank you. The Donna Sebo Show is heard weekdays, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. Callers are welcome to call in during the second half of the program at 253-582-5597.
Please note that the announcement is made at the bottom of the hour if I'm not in studio, able to take phone calls. Warriors for Peace is heard every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. For current information regarding my email newsletter, programming, and appearances, go to DelphiInternational.com. For information on publications, including my award-winning children's books, audiobooks, and more, go to MrsSebosClassics.com.
I am so delighted that I am going to be able to share some information with you this evening, but I am not going to be able to take any phone calls. We are going to be talking with some amazing, amazing people in the new year, and it's so exciting to me. Do you know I'm going to be celebrating my 20th anniversary of the Donna Sebo Show? When I started out doing this programming so many years ago, 2001, I had no idea that I would still be engaged in the wonderful experience of being able to interview people from around the world. And then also, 7 years ago, I was able to establish the Warriors for Peace Show, which has had a great deal of meaning for me as a broadcaster and as a person. We are so fortunate. We have so many wonderful people. We have technology today that enables us to reach out and to be a part of life in a very special way. And I don't think radio is ever going to go away truly, because it is something that brings a magic into life and into this world that we live in. Now, New Year's, oh my goodness, it is just right there. And I thought I would share with you, as this is the last program for the year, I thought I would share with you the information about some of the traditions around the world that people experience. Now, one of the Sebo family traditions, and it's been this way for a very long time because my husband is from the South, and we would have on New Year's Day black-eyed peas. Ah, yes, we'd have the ham hock, you'd have seasoning, and there was always a bottle of Tabasco on the table when the black-eyed peas were served with whatever we were going to have for our feast on New Year's Day. But there was a tradition that in his family was you had the black-eyed peas, but you always left one black-eyed pea in your dish when you finished. And that was as a token of appreciation for the food in life, and that pea represented that there would be food for others as well. So that was the tradition in our household. And if you've never had black-eyed peas with Tabasco sauce, try it sometime. You may not like it, but try it. That is just something that was a part of our home family culture. Well, in Japan, when it comes to New Year's, I learned about their soba noodles. Now, I've been aware of the soba noodles, but on New Year's Eve, because this is a buckwheat noodle, the noodles are very, very long. And the reason that they are made long is so that you have a chance to cut them. And what does this represent? It's very symbolic. It means you're going to go crossing from one year to the next. That's what the long noodle represents. And it's a noodle that's very easy to cut. And it signifies letting go of the past. And of course, you get to gobble that all up. Past your regrets. So you go into the new year and it's a fresh start. I like that. What do you think about that? I think that's a wonderful tradition. But that is a tradition, one of, sure, of many, because every country has their own ways of celebrating the new year. I chuckled when I came across one tradition out of Spain, and it had to do with grapes, green grapes. 12, exactly. Now, this would be a real challenge. For me, it would be a real challenge, because to have a clock that shows you the seconds. Everybody, if you were having a gathering, or if it's just you and your significant partner, you each get 12 grapes. 12 seconds
before New Year's Eve is declared, you have to, in 12 seconds, gobble down all 12 of those grapes. And if you get them all down, yep, you're going to have 12 months of good fortune. Now that would be something. And I could imagine people laughing, trying to do this in 12 seconds. But you can, you know, you really can. Test yourself sometime. And in France, they're like us. They have a huge feast. It's a celebration. And I have enjoyed so many New Year's, whether it's been with my spouse or and just us together, or it has been out at a party where we've been with other friends and we're all dressed up in our on our fancy clothes because it's party time and we dance until 4 a.m. in the morning. Whatever the circumstances were, it was always a good way to celebrate. So the French do the same. Maybe we learned it from the French, for all I know. Remember, Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin and many others, John Adams, were over in Europe and witnessed a lot of things. And I think New Year's, much of our tradition as we enjoy it today, does come from the European environment. Now, Italy, one of the traditions I found out about is lentils. And being of Italian background, when I was growing up, that was never part of our New Year's tradition. However, in Italy, it's a part of the meal. And it is a respectful appreciation of the fact that you have food to eat. And lentils are a very, very nutritious food as well. I had a very dear friend, an Italian friend, who that was something, if ever lentil soup was served in a restaurant, that's always what he went for. And he just absolutely loved it. He grew up with it. Now, what about Colombia? Yes, potatoes. This one I liked. I really liked this tradition, and I thought this would be a lot of fun, especially if you got the kids involved. They may not really see the value of it, but I think it would be a lot of fun for a lot of people, especially families. Now, this has to do with potatoes. You need three, and you need three potatoes for every individual that will participate in this. Now, one of the potatoes you peel entirely, one you don't peel, and one you only peel half of it. And what they would do in Colombia, they would put these potatoes under their beds. And at midnight, now obviously they did this earlier in the day, at midnight they would go up to the beds and without looking at the potatoes, they would move them around a little bit and then they'd reach in and pull out one of those potatoes. The first potato they touch is the one they have to pull out. Now, why would they do this? If you peel it and you pull out the peeled potato, it means you're going to have financial problems. Unpeeled potato means you're going to have abundance. And the half a potato that's peeled, well, you're going to have a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Fascinating. Now, I wonder how you keep people from cheating. Just a thought, just a thought. Australia, they're like us. It's food, it's celebration, it's fireworks. And of course, with the COVID situation, that may or may not be occurring. The Philippines, there is a tradition with New Year's, and that has to do with fruit. They collect 12 round fruits. Now, why must they be round? They say it represents the 12 months of prosperity. And it represents wealth for each month of the coming year. All of the fruits need to be round. Not a banana in there. All need to be round. Then we go to Denmark. I was amazed at how much I found out about Denmark. And, of course, you know, they have the short days and the long winter nights there. But they have some traditions. I wonder how in the world they ever got started. One is breaking of dishes. Now, this occurs usually with friends and of family, etc.
But you go to somebody's house, you go up to their front porch or their steps, whatever might be there, and you have a dish, a cup, something, and you break it into shards. You break it up against the porch. Now, why is that done? Well, it means that dependent on the amount of shards from the broken item, it means how much luck you're going to have in the coming year. They didn't say who cleans up afterwards, but that's one of the things. Also, they have a tradition. Now, this would be fun at a party. You have to stand on a chair at midnight, and not everybody's going to be doing it if you're having a party, obviously, but boy, it would be fun to have everybody just stand up on a chair, and then you're leaping into 2021. So you're leaving 2020 and leaping into 2021. Kids would have a great time with that one. And then also, for New Year's Eve dinner in Denmark, it's a tradition among many families to have boiled cod with mustard. And then they serve something that I know I would like. It's called a Tower of Marzipan. And marzipan, if you've never had it, oh, it's wonderful, especially if it's covered in chocolate. But what they do with the marzipan is a little bit different. Perhaps you've seen marzipan made into candies like fruit that decorates different things. Marzipan is just wonderful. It's made of almond paste, and it's very sweet. Well, they make a tower of marzipan donuts, and it's called a donut wreath cake. I don't know how to pronounce the Danish word for that, so I'm not even going to attempt it. But what they would do, sometimes what they would do with this, and it's the donut tower of marzipan is also used for other ceremonies, but on New Year's Eve, it can be tipped over and then covered with chocolate. Mmm. Oh, yes. Wonderful. And, you know, in Iceland, they use bread. Now, this is something, if there are those of you that love to bake bread, this is something that you might want to consider. It would surprise the people that might be sharing New Year's Eve with you. However, I think it still would be something that could be fun. But you take bread, and it's a sweet yeast bread, and you take a piece of it, and you bang the bread up against the wall of your home, because you're chasing away bad luck and bad spirits, and it ensures that food is going to be available in the new year. You do that on New Year's Eve. So, you know, maybe have a loaf of bread that you really don't care that it's banged up against the wall, and then have the other bread available for eating. And Brazil, the number 7 is considered very lucky on New Year's Eve. This is what they do in Brazil. Pomegranate seeds. Everybody gets 7 pomegranate seeds, and you eat those pomegranate seeds. Why? Because that represents abundance financially. And 7 grapes are also eaten. Everybody eats 7 grapes. That is for good health, a rich life in all levels. And then there are some Brazilians that take this a step further. The number 7, remember, is very, very sacred on New Year's Eve. They actually will go to the seashore, and they will jump over 7 waves in the ocean. And when they're doing that, each leap, they make a wish, 7 wishes for the new year. Isn't it wonderful what people think of? And in Greece, you have a sweet yeast bread that's eaten at midnight that honors Saint Basil. Now, before you eat a slice, that bread that is baked, that sweet bread, there is a slice that is cut first for Saint Basil and another slice that is cut for the poor. Also, what they do is they put a coin in the bread that they're baking. And when that slice is made and you happen to be the recipient of that coin, it means you're going to have good fortune for the entire year. That is something that has been done with many different holiday cakes and baked items. And when you find it, it's like, woo, I really have a lot to look forward to. Now, in New York, leave it to New Yorkers. My goodness, have you ever heard of a peppermint pig? I hadn't. Well, upstate New York, you will find that there is a peppermint pig that is especially made for New Year's Eve. And what it is, you take the pig comes along with a little hammer, and it's a candy, and you actually smash the pig. That's part of the New Year's celebration. And they say take a little piece because the peppermint is so strong in these little peppermint pigs that it may be a bit overwhelming. But you'll go into the New Year smelling like peppermint. Latin America, this one I chuckled at because I thought, I don't know what part of Latin America this is going to participate in. However, it all has to do with your underwear on New Year's. Mm-hmm. What's your underwear color? That's right. What color are you wearing underneath your dressy clothes? Well, they feel that certain colors bring certain benefits. If you have yellow underwear, it means you're going to have good luck. If you are wearing red underwear, that's going to be love. If you're wearing white underwear, that represents peace. They didn't get into any of the other colors of the rainbow, but those are the three primary ones. You can make up your own symbols if you want. It still is something that's a lot of fun. And then in Puerto Rico, to bring good luck in, they sprinkle sugar around their homes. The ants will love them. Here in the Pacific Northwest, that wouldn't work well at all because we get so much rain, which we are getting right now, that it would wash it all away. But it's a good thought. And then Germany and Austria, well, we're going to circle back to marzipan because for New Year's, lucky charms made of pigs or mushrooms, clovers, and even chimney sweeps. You'll find that the pastry shops over there have all kinds of little marzipan critters that you can give as gifts for a good fortune to your hosts if you're going to a party, or give them to yourself. But there's also little jewelry charms that can be given for a bracelet or a necklace that maybe would be a lovely gift. But last but not least, I thought I would share something about the wish jar. This is something that someone came up with, and they write out their wishes. And in a family, they may want to participate in it totally and have one big jar that includes everyone. Or you might want to just have individual jars. And they put in their wish list of what they want to see accomplished or achieved in the year 2021. And that is a wonderful tradition. That's a good tradition, the wish jar, that could be used on New Year's Day. You know, if you're having a gathering, and I know there are many people getting together, even though we are in this lockdown type of an environment, don't worry about it. It's going to pass. But there are so many fun things that you can come up with. You can make your own tradition. But I thought I would share those with you because it shows around the world, no matter what the culture is, looking forward to a new year is something that people have done for thousands and thousands of years. Donna Sebo here. I am not able to take any calls, but I wanted to share with you a recipe. If you are like me, sometimes you reach a saturation point with certain foods during the holidays. For example, turkey, or maybe there's some other foods that you say, I just don't want to look at that anymore. Well, how about a real flavorful dish made with eggplant? And you could use leftovers with this. That's right. You could use turkey. You could use chicken. You could use beef. But it's a Szechuan eggplant recipe that I think is really, and you serve it with rice. Catherine LaFond put it together. And she said, you know, when you are Working with eggplant, if they get really big, if you go to the store and they don't have little ones, but they have big ones, she said often they get very bitter the older that they are, the bigger they are. So this is what you do. You take cubes of your eggplant once you've peeled it and put them in paper towels over colander and salt them really, really well. Now, why do you salt them? It pulls the moisture out of the eggplant. It has got a lot of water in it. Then, once it's set for about 20 to 30 minutes and a lot of the moisture has drained away into the paper towels that are in the colander, then what you do, you press them with more paper towels. Then you're going to rinse them. Mm-hmm. You're going to rinse that salt off, and you're going to allow those eggplant cubes to dry. And that doesn't take all that long. It can be done fairly quickly. You could even put the eggplant, if you will, in a dry skillet if you wanted to. But I would just say let them stay at room temperature. And it is great where if you are going to, let's say, fry eggplant by salting them and letting them drain out the water, it's really good because you won't have a lot of water in the eggplant if you want to fry them, because they soak up oil like crazy. I remember the first time I cooked eggplant, I kept adding oil and adding oil and adding oil, not knowing about how you need to salt the eggplant to withdraw most of the moisture, so you don't need so much oil. Okay, you're going to need 1 pound of ground turkey or whatever your meat choice is, 3 pounds of soy sauce, a tablespoon of sesame oil, 1 bunch of green onions. You're going to, of course, peel those green onions and cut the ends off. You want to chop them up finely. 1.5 cups of white rice, 3 cups of water, 4 to 8 cloves of garlic, finely chopped, 3 tablespoons of ginger, finely chopped, 3 tablespoons of olive oil, 1 medium eggplant. You will have peeled it and cut it into 1-inch cubes, salting it and doing the process as suggested. 1 tablespoon of red curry paste, or if you really like it spicy, have 1 teaspoon of red chili paste, 1 tablespoon of sugar, 1 teaspoon of salt, and 3/4 cup of water. This is how easy it is. Your soy sauce, your sesame oil, and your green onions, you want to mix in with your ground turkey or your meat of choice. Leave that alone. Just let it marry flavors for about 10 minutes. Meanwhile, in a 1-quart saucepan, you bring water to a boil, add the rice, let the rice cook covered for about 15 minutes, and remove the pan from the heat and leave the lid on because it's still cooking. Then, if you have a huge saucepan or a wok, you heat it up to medium-high, add your olive oil. Before it begins to smoke, stir in the ginger and the garlic. Then you need to have your red curry paste already ready to go because it's only going to be, you know, like 15 to 30 seconds, and you're going to need to add that paste. Stir to blend, make all the spices, you know, blend in with that. Add then the ground turkey or your meat of preference. Continue to stir fry. You break up any lumps, and after 1 to 2 minutes, then add your eggplant. And you're going to brown it. It's going to take about 3 minutes for that to happen. Sprinkle in the sugar and the salt while you're continuing to stir fry 1 minute more. And then add 3/4 cups of water. Bring it to a boil. Give it a stir. Reduce the heat. Cover the pan. And allow the meat and all of the eggplant come together with flavors. It'll thicken. It'll take about 5 minutes. And voila, you've got a meal. And you know what? If you don't like the spiciness of the curry paste or the red chili paste, you can leave that out. Figure some other spice that you want to use. This is just a simple recipe, a great recipe. And I want to thank the Lady Catherine for sending that along. It's a bit of a change. And remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless, be well, happy New Year to you. I'll be talking to you on the 4th of January with my first program of the new year. God bless, be well, be happy, be safe.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.